Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you know you make me wanna
dog, kick my heels up and down, throw my hands up and down, throw my head back and down. Come on now, don't forget to say you will. Don't forget to say yeah, 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 yeah.
Say you will.
Say it right now, baby.
Say you will.
Come on, say, come on.
Say you will.
Say it better,
yeah. Say you will.
Come on now.
Say,
say that you love me.
Say,
say that you need me.
Say,
say that you want me.
Say,
you wanna please me.
Say,
come on now.
Say,
come on.
I still remember
do-de-do-ba,
when you used to be 9 years old.
Do-de-do-ba,
yeah,
do-de-do-ba,
I was a fool for you.
Do-de-do-ba,
from the bottom up of my soul.
Do-de-do-ba,
yeah,
do-de-do-ba,
now that you've grown up,
do-de-do-ba, do-de-do-ba,
enough to know.
Do-de-do-ba,
yeah, do-de-do-ba, you wanna leave.
Do-de-do-ba,
you wanna let me go.
Do-de-do-ba, do-de-ba,
I want you to know. I said I want you to know right now. Yeah, you've been good to me, baby. Better than I've been to myself. Hey, hey. And if you ever leave me, I don't want nobody else. Hey, hey. I said I want you to know. Hey, I said I want you to know right now. To me, you know you make me wanna
stop.
Zip my heels up and down,
throw my hands back and down,
kick my heels up and down. Come on now, take it easy.
Shouting. That was 4 minutes of shouting. You know, when they say a caps is a shouting, send them an MP3 of shout. Let them know the difference. Welcome to the Spirit of America Party and the Spirit of America Party book. I am looking at a United States Postal Service photo, and it's got bullets in it. Not bullet points, but bullets. Now, why would that be? Well, here's what it says. This is from one of those conservative watch groups, the Teabaggers. Dear conservative, warning, this will put a whole new spin on the phrase going postal. The post office has announced its intent to solicit proposals for assorted small arms and ammunition. Let that sink in for a second. Before a government agency or bureau is allowed to make a bulk purchase, it must first advertise to a number of manufacturers and distributors. The intent is to force the government to choose the lowest bidder and prevent overspending on goods and services. The post office is released a notice that it is actively searching for distributors to fulfill a large order. Whoever wrote this left out a couple of letters, like the ones you didn't get in your mail. Fulfill a large order for small arms and ammunition. Why do postal employees need firearms? Your guess is as good as mine. I still keep hearing those words of Obama bin Laden. One day we will have a military bigger than the U.S. military. I thought he was just going to bring in the Mongolian troops with the Soviet Union, like they did when they went to Berlin and raped the 2 million women. Yeah. Oh, you didn't know about that. Your teacher didn't teach you that, comrade, huh? When you went to communist cucumber school. Yeah, you were taught to hate your country and your mother and your father. Yes, and you're supposed to turn them in if they have a shortwave radio. The timing is certainly curious, however. The post office's solicitation announcement comes just 2 days after Senator Rand Paul, an R from Kentucky, he's an R from Kentucky, announced a proposed amendment to a bill that would allow law-abiding citizens to legally carry firearms in post offices around the country. Yeah, I can't wait to suit up. Here in New York, you can't even come in there with a radio. Yeah, the post office has been a gun-free zone since 1972. Do you know, I saw they're starting a crusade in the schools to take the gun off the gun-free zone sign. What are they going to do, put a head of lettuce up there? It's unbelievable, man. We're in a communist country. We are Pavlov's dogs to the nth degree. Yeah, so the timing is certainly curious. The post office has been a gun-free zone since 72, when Congress enacted a ban after a string of postal workplace shootings. Oh, that's right. The postal workers were shooting. I remember all the jokes they used to say, we don't have to go to Nam, just send the post office. Yeah, unbelievable. Unbelievable, yeah. This is where the phrase going postal came from. Unbelievable, man. What a country. Got a guy that's buying heroin on special. Yeah. 40 years ago, it was $2 a bag. The price has only doubled. I'm watching Al Jazeera had a big heroin promotion last night. And the heroin in New York City, they got an epidemic of heroin in New York City. And it's the same, I think it's the same quality product that killed many of my friends and relatives in the 60s. Yeah, they started with a little weed and then they OD'd. Yes, they didn't even bleed. But they were gone. They wasted their entire life. They had 50, 60 years left to live. And they decided to take a shortcut. Now Rand Paul proposes striking down the post office's gun-free zone law. And all of a sudden, the USPS sends out a request 2 days later to purchase assorted small arms and ammunition. I didn't realize law-abiding citizens carrying firearms would trigger an arms race. And the banks are talking about going, the post office is talking about going into banking. which means they'll have a lot of cash on hand. You know who is going to get a lot of robberies? Guess who's going to get a lot of robberies? Well, what was the two targets of all hold-up guys? What is it? What are the two main targets of hold-up guys? Liquor stores and gas stations, right? Okay. So now they're going to be hitting the pot shops. All the pot shops, everybody knows they're loaded with cash. So not only that, you can go in for the cash and get a little stash. Yeah, oh, we've opened up a Pandora's box. You know, Pandora is going to be the biggest genie that ever came out of a bottle that you ever saw. You have no idea what you did. You have no idea what fury you have unleashed on the American people. Yeah. The number one cause of death will be jumping out of windows in rehab units. Calls to the USPS has gone unanswered, and the post office has yet to explain the purpose of purchasing firearms and ammunition. Yet the U.S. Postal Service is just one of many non-law enforcement government agencies that have been stocking firearms and ammunition. The Department of Education, for example, has spent over $80,000 on Glock semi-automatic pistols and $17,000 on Remington shotguns. That's not a lot of money, I mean, to kill all those kids in school. No, you're going to need more guns than that. What is it? Did they ask the wrong question? You're going to blow them away? Yeah, what is freedom, teacher? What does that mean, freedom? Stand against the wall, son. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and the National Weather Service has bought 72,000 and 46,000 rounds of 40 caliber jacketed hollow point rounds, respectively. Hollow point means it goes in small, comes out big. The Social Security Agency one-upped them and ordered 174,000 hollow point rounds of ammunition. So, like, if you go apply for Social Security, you're going to get two behind the ear? And Obama's going to call it saving Social Security? Yeah, he's already got plans to gas the villages. And altogether, in the last 2 years, non-military federal agencies have purchased over 2 billion rounds of ammunition, mostly hollow points, for use in target practice. Anyone who knows anything about firearms recognizes how stupid it is to use hollow points for fire practice. You see, this ammunition has only one use, to be fired into flesh, and then the hollow points expand on impact. And when fired into flesh, in order to maximize the amount of tissue damage, there are self-defense rounds designed to be used against people and animals. I guess that when agencies like the Department of Homeland Security claim hollow points are used for target practice, that's just a euphemism for shooting other humans. I can't believe, it's going to get worse. The government is buying ammunition and firearms at a record pace that isn't even necessary. Government agencies have become so militarized that when the post office puts in an order small arms and ammunition, we're expected to just accept it. When the U.S. Army buys 600,000 Soviet AK-47 magazines for guns it doesn't even use, we're supposed to ignore it. Yeah, that just came up the other day, and somebody asked me, why are they buying just the magazines? And I told them, I don't know, unless it's to supply users of AK-47s, like in Syria. Someone has to stop this out-of-control spending before it is too late. The government is buying up every bullet it can get its hands on, because that means one less bullet in the hands of conservative Americans. But also there is a darker side to this. Most of the ammunition rounds bought by these agencies are jacketed hollow points. The sole purpose of this ammunition is to be used against flesh, which begs the question, are Americans the ultimate target? What does the post office, or who does the post office, need to shoot? Who is the National Weather Service targeting? And can we really trust the IRS with such firepower after they were caught targeting conservative groups? Maybe there's an internal communist hysteria that there's too many armed Americans and we have to defend ourselves when they find out we've taken over the country. This isn't a conspiracy theory, and it isn't hyperbole. Hyperbole. The rate stockpiling of ammunition by non-military federal agencies is absolutely startling. Not only does it dry up the supply for civilians, making it harder law-abiding citizens to exercise their right to keep and bear arms, but it calls into question why government bureaucrats need such firepower to begin with. We wouldn't have this problem if we had a teeny-weeny government. If we had a little teeny-weeny government instead of this big goddamn Goliath that we got that's doing nothing but destroying the country, the EPA should be arrested and deported to China to work the factories that they exported. The fact remains that these purchases must not be allowed to take place. So he's calling, Joe Otto from Conservative Daily is calling for revolution. Oh, that NASA picked that right up. NSA. We used to go to space with NASA. Now we're going to hell with NSA. By the way, any spy that they want to spy on, I don't care who it is. I don't care. Spy on them, baby. Get the goods on them. You don't overlook anybody. See, you know what you do? Once you get see if you got any information on where Obama was the night that Americans were being murdered in Benghazi. Was he on the phone? What was the conversation like? Yeah, we're in trouble. Okay, I'm going to go back. I'm going to give you a tune. I'm going to cheer you up now that I depressed you. And let's see what we got going here. We'll take a look at... We'll go to the studio... It always comes up to the letter A. Come on, we got to do something here. Nana, oh, that's 8 minutes. We can't play you 8 minutes. Oh, Native Dancer. Would you like to hear Native Dancer? That'll cheer you up.
Once there was a Native Dancer down in Egypt land. When she did her Native Dance, she got the biggest hand. People came through burning sands, especially the males, to see this fiery torso shaker make with the seven bales. Da 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 da. See what you know what I mean, oh shake a wicked tambourine, oh da da da. All the sheiks and Arabies said fooey to their wives. Day by day her fame began to spread to every nook, and pretty soon this Native Dancer shook for King Farouk.
Da 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 da.
She was, you know what I mean, oh shake a wicked tambourine, oh da da da. Came with great anxiety, gave her pearls and diamonds just to see what they could see. She was loaded down with jewels, and let me tell you, man, to bring it home, this baby had to hire a caravan.
Da 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 da.
See what you know what I mean, oh shake a wicked tambourine, oh
da da da.
With her figure and his brain, she made $1 million. Here's a big surprise for you. Her real name is O'Shea. She used to live next door to me in Brooklyn, USA.
Da 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 da.
That's the finish of the story. How a gal won fame and glory with
da, 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 da.
of things I picked up on that I don't like, I'll share them with you. I'm watching Fox, and they're talking about something that some atrocity that NBC purported to have committed. And there's a lawyer who's a pretty savvy guy, and he's the official Fox lawyer, and he comes on as a guest many times, and he looks like he wears glasses, and he looks the lawyer type, and I always enjoyed what he had to say. You know, he seemed to always be hit the nail on the head, and he's talking about. NBC and what they're doing, and he says it's shades of McCarthyism. Well, man, that really upset me, because nobody knows anything about Joe McCarthy, but everybody knows the word McCarthyism. Joe McCarthy was on a witch hunt for communists, and the ones he missed are still in government today. Or their children are in government today. And Joe McCarthy was a one-man fighting machine, and he had a lot of opposition. And he was a senator from Wisconsin, and I got a big, thick book on Joe McCarthy and all the people that he uncovered. And at the time that he uncovered them, everybody cast doubts on the truth that he was telling. But when the Soviet Union fell, there was a group of papers that were given to the West called the Winona Papers or Venona Papers. And all of the guys on McCarthy's list were listed there, and many were on a payroll of the Soviet Union. So nobody knows about McCarthy, because McCarthy had two big enemies. His two biggest enemies were the Communist Party and Hollywood, which was full of communists. And that's why you're seeing the movies you're seeing, because they're still there. So that was one issue that sort of bothered me. And I'm up to, I think it's like chapter 27 in the book, and it's McCarthy, who was supposed to be crushed, is still alive, and the tide has turned in the favor of the Republicans. And for the first time since 1928, a Republican president is in the White House, and that's Dwight D. Eisenhower. And that elevated McCarthy's status. And he also had Democrat allies, like the Kennedy family. And I think he dated one of the Kennedys. And Bobby Kennedy worked for him. And that's where I'm at. And when I proceed on, I'll give you more details. Last night, the other thing that bothers me is that they're gloating over the problems of Sochi in Russia. And I don't think that's right. The Russians have put together their best program. And it has shortcomings, but, man, why make fun of it? What are we, a bunch of silver spoon snobs? You should be welcoming the attempt that they're making to entertain the world. Taking over the world, that's a different story. But they should give Putin kudos for trying to put together a nice package. And one day, we could be Sochi. We've already been in 9-1-1. So be careful of what you mock. The other night I was talking about Kuwaiti teenagers or young Kuwaitis, and how I was sitting with them in a luncheonette, and one of the Kuwaitis was reading a story, and the story was about an imam who was on trial because he had 27 wives. I just happened to say he was over the limit, and this Kuwaiti kid, he cracked up. He thought that was hilarious. You know, what's funny to Americans is not funny to foreigners. What's funny to foreigners is not funny to Americans, but this kid thought that was hilarious. So it brought back another story that most people don't know, and that is the difference between Sunni and Shia. And in the Shia religion, there is what is called mutah. And mutah is a contract that a wife of any Shia, a Muslim, can sign with a visiting Shia Muslim to, if he's away from home, to have sex. And you can have the contract for a day, a month, a year. And the Sunni consider that prostitution. And they look down on the Shia for the practice of mutah. And I was with a couple of Sunnis one night, and we were joking about it. And I said, you know, we could make a lot of money in Iran. We could put up mutah meters over the bed with a picture of the Ayatollah. Yeah, and time's up. It's a strange world out there, man. You think you know it all, and then all of a sudden somebody rocks your boat. So what are we going to talk about? Let's see here. Oh, this one, Front Page Magazine. You ever see the Front Page Magazine? This is from a guy named David Horowitz. He grew up in a communist family. He was a communist in his college days. And I think he witnessed the murder of somebody by communists, and that turned him off forever. Or maybe he just witnessed the cruelty of communists against a non-communist, and it turned him off forever. But here's some of the headlines in his book, in his weekly production, Executive Tyranny, the Problems Bigger Than Obama. The Roots of the President's Imperial Impulse. Want to see what that's about? See if we can read it quickly. We won't do the whole thing. We'll do what they call a synopsis. Barack Obama is threatening to bypass Congress and use executive orders. This guy is something else, man. You know what it is? He has a planned deadline for different stages of execution. So, and if one stage fails, he doesn't stop and go back and try and re-win that position. He continues on to the next stop. For example, he wanted to seize all the weapons so that he could then really issue executive orders that could not be thwarted. Yeah. So he didn't get the guns, so he continues to the next stop. So we're not just going to be waiting for legislation in order to make sure that we're providing Americans the kind of help that they need. Beware of people. You know what Ronald Reagan said, right? The deadliest words in the world are, hi, we're from the government, and we're here to help you. Yeah. Okay, so they're talking about how he's slip-sliding away. And he's setting the mode for unconstitutional attitudes. Obama is just the extreme version of a widespread belief among many in both parties that an enormous, intrusive federal regulatory and redistributionist regime is necessary for solving problems. My friends, we got to make that government smaller. Close the EPA, close the IRS, and go to a one tax payment. Put an end to all these imaginary crap taxes. You see, this president, he wants to raise the minimum wage from 7 to 10, and he wants his cut on the $3 difference. He is going to have a landslide of profits when he raises the minimum wage. He doesn't care about your bottom line. He's looking for his cut. So if it's a $3 difference from 7 to 10, how much you think you're going to net home? Was there somebody at the government working with you this morning when you got up out of bed and got run over by a car on the way to work? Was there anybody there with you? Said, buddy, you know, we're in this together. When the EPA closes a coal mine, instead of closing the coal mine, why not help the miners mine coal efficiently and environmental friendly? It can't be done. There's no such word as can't be done. So you want to hear what some of the people said? When the President of the United States under the U.S. Constitution says, I will act on my own, he's become a dictator. Americans have become the biggest group of fools and willfully ignorant cowards on the planet. That's by a guy named Veeper. Kerry, U.S. Navy retired, says, Russian President Vladimir Putin said that negotiating with Obama is like playing chess with a pigeon. I didn't know that. I know when he was talking about going to Syria, Putin said that Obama is like a monkey with a hand grenade. And then the press, the American press, is covered it up. And Putin made believe he never said it. The pigeon knocks over all the pieces, craps on the board, and then struts around like it won the game. The sad and pathetic part is that a foolish liberal Democrat also thinks the pigeon Obama won. Unbelievable. This one is called When Does He Stop? He doesn't. He did not. This is an internet meme that had been online for years. It is a commonly known photo. And it says arguing with the liberals like playing press with a chess with a pigeon. You shouldn't repeat things as fact without looking them up. Hey, what are you? He's only playing Democrat. Who lies better than Democrats? Communists. Well, you know what? They seem to lie the same. Maybe they are one and the same. Yeah. Unbelievable. Now those two guys are dealing, and we're not going to get involved in that. We're going to jump out of here, and we're going to go to more information, because we're information people. Yes. And when we get caught lying, we can always say we were just playing a Democrat. So you want to do, that's a four-minute tune. I give you Picadillo by the Afania All-Stars. This is Going to Florida music. Get in the car, turn on the air conditioning. Do you like that? A little peppy, right? A little peppy. Makes you wiggle. Okay. Who made the rule caps is shouting? I can't stand it. I do a lot of caps. And when I think I've done a pretty good blog, somebody will come back to me and go, caps is shouting. So I had to search my my ability of recall, and I replied. I figured I would create what do they call it? You put a little package together, and then you can attach it, and it sort of spells out what you're talking about. There's a word for it in computers, and there's a thing you do, and this comes up all the time. So, who made the rule caps is shouting? Lowercase is discriminatory and creates a hardship for people with macular degeneration. Not only that, but it is a communist form of mind control. It's a minor example of Pavlov's dogs. How do you know you're not brainwashed? No one knows who made the rule caps is shouting. I think it goes back to KGB headquarters. The communists overran a town in Georgia and executed every man, woman, and child. And they only had a computer. They only had one computer. Hello? Hello? Okay, that's Chase telling me I'm overdrawn. So what? I can always draw another picture. Did you ever hear that one about the woman that she couldn't understand why she was overdrawn in her account and she had 20 checks left? Yeah, no, always making fun of the women, huh? I think it goes back to KGB headquarters. The communists overran a town in Georgia and executed every man, woman, and child. They only had one computer in the whole town, and the last cry for help was in caps, help, help, help. And the reply back was caps is shouting. This is not a true story. I was just playing Democrat. Here's the true story. Caps goes back to fax days. Middle Eastern people find it easier to read English in caps. As you know, many faxes bleed when Gupta falls off the generator bike, and it's easier to recreate the fax when it is in caps. There are also people who have caps privileges, like myself. I am authorized to write in caps. I'm a captain. Beware of those who wish to control you, making up rules as they go along. And here's another one to watch out for. This is a deadly one. A moment of silence is not a moment of prayer. It is a muzzle put on you by Muslims. And we opened our show tonight with Shout, because Shout is shouting. Hang in there, and we'll see what else we're going to read. What else are we going to read? Oh, Walid Shubat. You know Walid Shubat? There's a couple of Middle Eastern people who are very brave. One is a judge in Egypt who sentenced Mercy to no mercy, sentenced him to be arrested and put in prison for crimes against the Egyptian people. And here you got Eric Holder. He can't even get to the bottom of the IRS scandal. Yeah. So I'm going to read you The Untold Secret Behind Mercy's Fall. This is by Walid Shubat, a Muslim who converted to Christianity. When it comes to the truth behind the removal of Mohammed Mercy from power on July the 3rd, 2013, a secret must be told about what sets that momentous event in motion. The judicial branch of every nation should be one its people take pride in. As an Egyptian American, I am no exception. Egypt's judges are part of a system that has been around for thousands of years. Most of them are very courageous.
So, let me see. Okay, sometimes it is best to make your point by comparing and contrasting two cases. Let's take a look at the case of a sitting president in Egypt and that of the uncle of a sitting president in the U.S. The first case was handled in early 2013 by Honorable Egyptian Judge Mr. Khalid Mohammed Magoub. The second case was handled more recently by a honorable, let's call it dishonorable, American judge, Mr. Leonard Shapiro. In Magoub's case, he was presiding over a case in Ismailia, Egypt. It had to do with the escape of an unknown prisoner from Wadi al-Natroun prison near Alexandria. The judge could not help but notice that one of the prisoners on the list was the name of a man Magoub knew very well. It belonged to a man he saw on television every day. That name was Mohamed Morsi, who was residing in Egypt's presidential palace, the equivalent of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Judge Magoub learned that Morsi, along with 34 other prisoners, many of whom held the highest levels of authority within the executive branch of the Egyptian government, had escaped from prison. Complicating matters was the fact that one of the guards was murdered during the prison break, which means serious charges would be brought against all men if Magoub did the right thing. Doing so, however, would put him in grave danger, and we all saw what happened to Anwar Sadat reviewing a parade many years ago for signing a peace agreement with Israel. And that was Muslim Brotherhood that killed him. Judge Magoub is an extremely observant and devout Muslim. His father was the head of Islamic Sharia law in Ain Shams University in Cairo. He decided to look towards heaven and pray, "Thy will be done." They say every man faces his moment of truth. For Judge Magoub, the moment came the next day when he made an unprecedented and very brave legal move. He issued a court order mandating that the prosecutor add the name of Egypt's acting president along with the 34 other rulers of Egypt to the list of defendants. He further ordered that the sitting president be tried in the highest court in the land for participating in this prison break. Tahani al-Jabali, the former chancellor of the Constitutional Court of Egypt, said on national television after Magoub's decision that Morsi had lost his legitimacy as president of Egypt as a consequence of that decision. Al-Jabali is the same justice who spoke out publicly against President Barack Obama's brother Malik, accusing him of being a Muslim Brotherhood operative. Magoub knew that due to the death of the guard during the break, he was ordering the prosecutor to demand the death penalty for the sitting president of Egypt. Today, that ruling is seen as an initial spark that led the Egyptian judicial system to raise the red card in the face of Morsi. Just a few months later, 30 million Egyptians took to the streets and demanded that Morsi go. Today, ex-President Morsi is on trial thanks, in large, to the actions of one man who thumbed his nose at the path of least resistance. As for the second case, the honorable judge, dishonorable judge, Mr. Leonardo Shapiro, was deciding the fate of a Kenyan citizen who was arrested for driving under the influence, DUI, and was found to be legally drunk. The U.S. prosecutor added that the driver was an alien whose U.S. visa had expired many years earlier. The honorable judge told the defendant, "Congratulations, welcome to America." The defendant was Mr. Onyango Omar Obama. My close Mexican friends in Arizona have said to me, like, if my nephew was stopped for a speeding ticket and was found to have overstayed his U.S. visa by one day, he would have been deported the same week. Such statements prompt me to think, but my friend, your nephew was not drunk while he was driving, and you are no Barack Obama. This is Obama's America, my friend, where justice is blind, but the judges see very well who is who and who his uncle is. In the U.S., the top justice in the land, Chief Justice John Roberts, cast the deciding vote on the extremely controversial Obamacare law. Many Americans hold the view that Roberts was either intimidated or blackmailed into ruling in Obama's favor. Whether these claims have merit is for others to decide, but I will say this. If the most powerful justice in America was intimidated into voting in favor of the president's signature legislation, a much lower-ranking justice in Egypt was willing to charge his president with murder. Self-preservation was subjugated to Lady Justice, as it should be in any court of law. We can change the present and the future, but we can never change history. History tells us that as Christopher Columbus was lost on the high sea, Egyptians had already found their high court centuries later. The high court saved them from the chaos that the Obama administration wanted to impose on them. Ironically, to most Americans, Egypt is merely a third world country that receives financial aid from the U.S. The Obama administration has taken upon itself the responsibility of telling Egyptians how they should run their country, yet Mursi and dozens of other Muslim Brotherhood leaders are behind bars. Those are first world accomplishments. Senator John McCain could not have offended more Egyptians during his last visit to our country. He impugned the very judicial system that played an integral role in ridding Egypt of a dictator and a tyrant in waiting. In a meeting while in Egypt, McCain essentially demanded that Mohamed Mursi be given a fair trial, as if the senator from Arizona viewed himself as the supreme guardian of justice in the new world. John McCain has been a senator for 25 years. He never made one dope bust. His state is the FedEx distribution center. No offense to FedEx. I mean, it's tuned up to be a very efficient distribution center for drugs throughout the country. Egyptian Senator Mr. Samem Makram Abid went on public television and demanded that U.S. Ambassador to Egypt, Ann Patterson, is another case where they throw women in the face of Muslims as ambassadors. April Glaspie, the one in Yemen, Kathy Bodine. April Glaspie told Saddam Hussein it's okay to invade Kuwait. Kathy Bodine covered up the coal massacre, and she announced 14 days before the coal arrived that the target was coming. Yeah. Ann Patterson be branded persona non grata in Egypt. In the days before Mursi's removal, Patterson gave a speech in which she implied the June 30th protests would not be effective. She was wrong, and she was disgraced, yet still promoted by the Obama administration. So long as you do the dirty work, you get a promotion here in the United States, man. You want to go after the Tea Party? You got a promotion, and you get a bonus. Nonetheless, her exit from Egypt closely followed Mursi's ouster. Egyptians could not be happier with her departure. They had to pull her back, huh? That's good. NGOs are not too distant cousins of lobbyists. The Egyptian public, more so than the government, has asked for a cessation of American-financed NGOs being permitted to operate in Egypt. The people feel that these organizations have fueled the war on their country's sovereignty and stability. If, as Egyptians suspect, the Obama administration wants to invest in NGO-funded programs, folks, the government has too much money. You want a smaller government, and you got to cut off their source of revenue. You are their source of revenue. Tell them you want your money back. You're not happy with the way things are going. So, Obama administration wants to invest in NGO-funded programs to put justices with the legal skills of the Honorable Leonard Shapiro into positions currently held by justices like Khalid Maghoub. Can you blame Egyptians for rejecting such NGOs? I don't like them here in my country, and I'm sure they're twice as bad in your country. Egyptians are not willing to trade justice for politics. You got to give them a lot of credit. 30 million of them poured out in the streets. There you get 30 million pouring out in the streets in the USA. You got a revolution. Okay, so let's take a break. We'll escape back to the blogging studio, and I'll give you the Phantom of the Opera. of the biggest regrets in my life. I never made love to an opera star. I love those high notes. Welcome back to the Spirit of America party. Okay. Most commented stories from Newsmax. Obama blames Fox News for his problems. Yeah, if he could only squash Fox, the rest of the suckers would fall in line. Obamacare time bomb. Heirs may face bill for your health care. So in other words, they're going to go after your heirs if you die and you owe money. Coke's multilingual America the Beautiful ad, it draws fire. You remember the old Coke song, I'd like to buy the world a Coke? I rewrote it. And I'd like to buy the world a Coke and teach it treachery. I forget the rest of the words, and I did a quick blog and shot it out there, and I can't find it. But if I can ever find it, I'll do it for you. It's pretty good. Coca-Cola bought more than a Super Bowl ad when it aired a commercial featuring American the Beautiful sung in various languages. It also got a lot of controversy for its $8 million. I had to go back and watch the Coke ad again. And so, because I missed it, but somebody told me that there's two gay guys in it with their daughter. And I went back and watched it, and it could be, but I'm still confused. If we cannot be proud enough as a country to sing America the Beautiful in English in a commercial during the Super Bowl by a company as American as they come, doggone it, we're on the road to perdition. It's funny, do you know that the word perdition? It's in a song called Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition. It's a World War II song. It was sung on a destroyer. I think it might have been the Louisiana. And one of their turrets got knocked out, and they were passing the ammunition up to one of the remaining guns that was still firing. And they sang that song. And one of the lines in it is, we don't have time to be a politician. So praise the Lord and pass the ammunition, or we're all on the road to perdition. Alan West is the guy who complained about this Coca-Cola ad. West called the 60-second ad truly disturbing. I'll tell you what's disturbing. That Americans are being painted as helpless. Oh, they're so helpless, they don't understand the other languages. Oh, they're so helpless, they just can't get out of their own way. You know what? Nobody has to be helpless when it comes to language. You got a very successful teaching facility called Rosetta Stone. If the government, instead of giving Obama phone, had given Rosetta Stone to everybody that comes into the country, in 2 weeks they would all be speaking English. Instead of having a woman at the motor vehicle who is handling the line for Moldavian-speaking people. You know, my daughter, when she calls up and she wants help from the telephone company, and they say, if you only speak Chinese, press 21, she presses 21. And the woman will answer, and she'll say, look, I got a trouble with my phone. They say, you're not Chinese. They say, listen, I got trouble with my phone. Doesn't matter what language I'm speaking. You speak English, right? Okay, take this down. Yeah, unbelievable. We're sick, man. West called the 60-second ad truly disturbing, and including a lengthy quote by former President Teddy Roosevelt. Oh, yeah, he was big on this hyphenated Americans, which ended, we have room for but one language here, and this is the English language, for we intend to see that the crucible turns our people out as Americans and American nationality and not as dwellers in a polyglot boarding house. And we have room for but one sole loyalty, and that is loyalty to the American people. Very well said. I'm entitled. I'm first-generation American. I'm entitled to an Irish passport. and Irish citizenship. But I got to tell you, I would give it up tomorrow, and I don't have it. I never went through the hassle. But if I did have one, I'd give it up tomorrow if everybody else would give up their second passports. I think if you're an American, you're an American all the way. You got to be 100%. And a lot of money that's being made in the USA today is going to other countries back home, tax-free. And here you got the government that they're trying to win back the corporations they chased away with higher taxes. And now they're saying, come back, we'll give you a tax cut. Yeah, and bring all your profits with you. Sure, who's going to do that? So, let's see if anybody commented. Oh, there's a lot of comments. A lot of people got hot about this. Dear world, despite what this commercial has led you to believe, in America we speak English. Our Constitution was written in English. You can't land a plane anywhere in the world if you don't speak English. All contracts are written in English. Well, our Constitution was written in English, and anyone being hires who speaks a foreign language also needs to speak English. This is an English-speaking country, and you should expect to assimilate. We have all heard stories about German immigrants and Italian immigrants who would not speak their native language in front of their children because they wanted them to learn English. And Rosetta Stone, at 2 weeks, you can be speaking English. My son learned Portuguese in 2 weeks. He had an incentive. He had a girlfriend who didn't speak English. He should have bought her Rosetta Stone. No, she does speak English. Tell that to the lefties who think we're evil. Marxist academics who tell our kids how we killed the Indians, enslaved the blacks, destroyed the climate, and are now abusing the immigrants. One of the most horrific photos, drawings I ever saw was an Arab raid in Africa for slaves. And they were marching the slaves over the Nafud Desert. And they had big, long poles. And there were like 12 slaves abreast with chains on their neck. And the poles went through a ring. And there was row upon row upon row of slaves. And they were all walking. And the Arabs were on horses and camels driving them across the Nafud Desert to be sold into Saudi Arabia. And why any African American would take an Arab name is beyond me, because slavery is still in Saudi Arabia today. You know when they outlawed slavery in Saudi Arabia? 1962. The Emir of Kuwait, his brother's mother was a slave when I was there in 98. We did kill Native Americans. We did enslave African Americans. And we are currently destroying the earth. Not sure on the abusing immigrants, though. And we are currently destroying the earth. And you know what the UN solution to destroying the earth is? Destroy the people. They say we have too many people. They want abortion clinics all over the world. We watched Rwanda, the movie Rwanda, yesterday. My son freaked out. He says, look, they don't even have guns. They got machetes, and they're killing one another. You know the story of Rwanda? 800,000 died. The Tutus were the ruling power. They were a minority. The Hutus were the majority. The president was killed and when his plane was shot down, and the Hutus went on a blood frenzy, and they hacked people to death. And my son freaked out when he saw the French troops just standing there, and then they left all the people to die. He did not say any kind words about France. Yeah. You know, you got to think about that. I mean, Hitler walked all over France. He almost had England. He almost had Russia. He went through all of the Benelux nations, and that was one guy with a good, well-trained army. And, of course, nobody had guns. And these Tutus didn't have guns. And the end result was the Tutus came back after there were 800,000 dead. And Bill Clinton said that we couldn't get involved because it wasn't genocide. And somebody said, well, what's genocide? He said, a million. We might get involved if there's a million. That's Bill Clinton, who gave us the Clinton Towers in downtown New York. And he got a pass. The press elects the presidents. Civilized. We're civilized. And murdering the heathens. Unbelievable. Yeah. Slavery has been around since the Bible. Oh, I did see one ruling. I was reading an article, Memri, M-E-M-R-I. It's a Middle East intelligence gathering organization, and they print ongoing stories of what's taking place. And I think it was Memri, and they were talking about how a rape is a cultural thing. And they were talking about, they had a picture, it was horrendous, of a white girl with reddish hair. And she was from New Zealand. And she had been raped. And they showed her, like sitting in the emergency room. And she wanted her picture taken. She wanted everybody to see what happened to her. She was covered in blood. And she had a big gash in her head. And they were talking about the judges were letting the rapist go because the rapist argument was, we're not familiar with your culture. And where we come from, this is a cultural thing. How's that? And they were showing all of the rapes that were taking place in Australia, in New Zealand, by Muslims. And the argument was the same. And they had a saying that if a woman is wearing a burqa. If a woman is wearing a burqa, that is like a piece of meat that's being protected. But if the piece of meat has no covering, it's okay. It's okay to do whatever you got to do. How's that? But you know what? They don't even respect women with burqas. They are a very, very aggressive people. Yes, the liberals have selective memories. They like to repeat the lie that the Nazis were fighting fascists. The Nazis were, in fact, a leftist fascist. Hence the name, the National Socialist Party. The proof in the pudding is that the communists and the Nazis are what together. They made a pact to divide Europe amongst themselves. And communists in the United States, like Bella Abzug, were supporting Hitler because he was an ally of Russia, of the Soviet Union. And when Hitler created Operation Barbarossa and launched an attack on the Soviet Union, Stalin couldn't believe it. And at that very moment, the communists in the United States turned against the Nazis. But up until that time, they were allies. The only difference between the Nazi party and the Communist Party is the uniform. They are one and the same. And yet, Hollywood never shows you the evils of communism. They only show you the evils of World War II Germany. But at the end of 1945, the Nazi party was gone. The Nazis were gone, kaput. But the Soviet communists came to the United States, and they're here now. They're sitting in courts, in schools, and they are stronger than ever. So, what are we going to do? There's a lot of talk here about Africa. Africa is bleeding, man. They're bleeding big time. And the Muslims are killing the Christians big time. And nobody's saying anything. Just like Clinton never said anything while 800,000 Rwandans were cut to pieces. And the horror stories, you know what those guys did with machetes, you wouldn't believe. Terrible. I had a list of, let's see if I can find it real quick. Oh, the ACLU, that's the Communist Party at work. Every day they go to Supreme Court to bring down the country. And I had, now I won't find it, right? That's the way it goes. I just watched American troops fighting in Fallujah. Halfway through the battle, the State Department calls a ceasefire to negotiate with Al-Qaeda. This is something else I found. The troops are pulled back, and Al-Qaeda reoccupies the same real estate. Oops, negotiations fail. State Department says, let the troops die again, taking the same real estate. Why not put the State Department on the front lines with cameras and push them way out front? Pay attention to the relieving of critical combat officers by the D.C. Al-Qaeda. Impeach Eric Holder, sequester NBC for their own protection. The Benghazi cover-up is the most blatant. There was only one decision made that night by Obama and blood clot Clinton. Let them die. Don't bother me. I'm too busy to worry about a couple of flag-flying Americans. Where's my burial speech? Was McChrystal set up? Was Petraeus betrayed? What was he doing at Communist KGB, University of Columbia? Was General Allen injected with stupid serum? Who are the 200 officers that were relieved? Who are the 92 missile crew members who were relieved? Why was the officer in charge of 450 missiles fired for being drunk in Russia? Who got him drunk? Who exposed them? Was it another Obama gift to Putin? Wait till I'm reelected, and then we can make a lot of progress. Why were all the witnesses to the Benghazi murders made to sign NCNDs and take lie detector tests to find out who they spoke to? Why is the one rooftop survivor never given airtime? There was one rooftop survivor. Why is it necessary to pull an entire carrier task force out of the line to go on safari with Barack Obama? Could those millions wasted have fed the poor of the USA? Why are all taxes so high? Can we raise the minimum wage and make the raised portion tax-free? Why should the government take another cut of your hide? What did they do to earn it? And then I did a tribute to J. Edgar Hoover. The left lies, rewrites history. They can't wait till the last American is dead. I have on YouTube, Flag Burners of Record. You should see it just to know who your enemies are. I guess I'm not going to find it. I had a list of all the countries who gave up their guns and how they fared. Here it is, I got it. Gun control, the historical record. In 1929, the Soviet Union established gun control. From 1929 to 1953, 20 million dissidents, unable to defend themselves, were rounded up and exterminated. In 1911, Turkey established gun control. From 1915 to 1917, 1.5 million Armenians, unable to defend themselves, were rounded up and exterminated. Germany established gun control in 1938, and from 1939 to 1945, a total of 13 million Jews and others who were unable to defend themselves were rounded up and exterminated. And when they went to Hitler as he was taking away their guns, he told them, "Look, why do you need guns? You have the SS that will protect you." And at the end, at the fall, he couldn't wait until all the Germans were dead with him. Guatemala established gun control in 1964. From 1964 to 1981, 100,000 Mayan Indians, unable to defend themselves, were rounded up and exterminated. Uganda established gun control in 1970. In 1971 to 1979, 300,000 Christians, unable to defend themselves, were rounded up and exterminated. Cambodia established gun control in 1956. From 1975 to 1977, 1 million educated people, unable to defend themselves, were rounded up and exterminated. And here's the one we were talking about. 1990s, Rwanda established gun control. In a span of 100 days, in April 1994, 800,000 people who were unable to defend themselves were massacred to death, mostly by machetes. How many dead, hacked-up bodies do you think were found holding a gun? Zero. Defenseless people rounded up and exterminated in the 20th century because of gun control? 56 million. Oh, wait a minute. Let me get that count right. 56 million. Interesting, huh? We'll go to a tune, then we'll see if there's any more of fire. Boom, boom, boom. Here we go, we're coming up. Do a little Frankie Lyman.
Do bopsy do, boom 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 boom.
Do bopsy do, boom 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 boom.
Oh.
found that article about Muslims' treatment of, you had to see this girl. Man, she had her picture taken. She wanted everybody to see it. She had blonde, reddish hair, blue eyes. She's got a, it looks like a big blood clot on the top of her head. Her entire face is just spattered with blood. Her hair on both sides of her face in the front is blood red. And no one knows the real name of the Port Hills groper, the Muslim refugee who stalked and attacked over a dozen women jogging in Port Hills. Though he was arrested, tried, and sentenced, instead the New Zealand court gave him permanent name suppression to protect his status in his Muslim community. Judge Jane Farish, who had told a Maori rapist who had lured an Australian tourist into a dark street and beat her while trying to tear off her clothing, said, "If I had my way, I would release you today. Let the groper off with community service because his actions were caused by cultural ambiguities. The Muslim groper had blamed his serial assaults on a misunderstanding of cultural differences, claiming that he had just been trying to be friendly. In his Middle Eastern Muslim culture, friendliness apparently consisted of forcibly groping female joggers while telling them Happy New Year. Estimullah Sharifi, an Afghan refugee, offered an Australian woman a ride home and then put his right hand around her neck and his left hand over her mouth, and he raped her. Sharifi's lawyers claimed that due to cultural differences, he was confused about the nature of consent. And it wasn't his first misunderstanding of the difference between rape and sex. He already had been sentenced to 7 years in jail for raping an Australian teenager on Christmas Day in 2008. The sentencing judge rejected Sharifi's excuse, but a court of appeals judge found that claiming cultural differences was a valid basis for an appeal. You know what should happen to that judge? Last year, an Egyptian Muslim cleric was arrested for groping women on the beach. The spokesman for the DY Mosque said, "By groping a grandmother pushing a stroller and an underage girl, Ahmed Akali had been showing love and compassion, but had misunderstood the cultural differences between Australia and Egypt. In Muslim Egypt, 99.3% of women and girls have been sexually harassed. What is ordinary behavior in Egyptian Muslim culture is a criminal act in Australia, where women are considered to be human beings." Ahmed Atori made his own effort at showing love and compassion by sexually assaulting seven women and girls. The youngest was his victim was 13 years old, and afterwards he laughed, and they blamed it on cultural differences, and Judge Margaret Rizkala agreed, telling the Libyan Muslim rapist, "It seems you were very ill-prepared to deal with cultural differences." Unbelievable. In the Ashfield rapes, four Pakistani brothers raped 18 women and girls. Their father urged that his sons be pardoned because they did not know the culture of this culture. One of the brothers appealed his sentence, arguing that he had committed the rapes based on cultural differences on how Pakistani girls behaved. The older brother said in court that only now they had gained a better understanding of Australian culture did they realize rape was wrong. Explaining why he raped one girl, he said, "She was not related to us and she was not wearing any purdah. Like she was not covered her face, she was not wearing any headscarf." Purda refers to the practice of keeping a women isolated and locked up in home. The hijab and the burqa are forms of mobile purda, clothing that acts as a symbolic partition, keeping women faced in even in public. The father of the rapist brothers said of the victims, "What do they expect to happen to them? Girls from Pakistan do not go out at night. And when enough Pakistanis migrate to their country, neither will Australian girls, especially now that at least one of the brothers has already been released." The cultural differences between the Muslim world and the Western world behind these rape cases were highlighted when Australia's Grand Mufti, the infamous Sheikh Hilali, had said in response to earlier Muslim gang rape cases that in sexual matters it's 90% the woman's responsibility. Yes. Quoting Al-Rafti, the Grand Mufti, "If I came across a rape crime, I would discipline the man and order the woman to be arrested and jailed for life." How's that? Then the Grand Mufti went on to compare rape victims to uncovered meat. If you take uncovered meat and put it on the street, on the pavement, in a garden or a park, without a cover, and the cats eat it, is it the fault of the cat or the uncovered meat? The uncovered meat is the problem. If a woman is in her boudoir, in her house, and she is wearing the veil, and if she shows modesty, disasters don't happen. It's no wonder that Pakistani girls don't go out at night. In Muslim culture, women face a choice between parda and rape, and now so do women in the Western countries who come face to face with the Muslim rape culture. Unbelievable, and story after story. What are we going to do here? What are we going to do when we have Sharia law? Well, the girls aren't going to like those decisions. When Mohammed captured Safiya bint Huwai, a Jewish teenager, during his campaign of ethnic cleansing against the region's Jewish population, he told his followers, "Tomorrow, if you see her covered with a veil, then she is my wife. If you see her without a veil, then she is a slave girl." There are no free women in Islam. There are women who belong to one man, and there are women who belong to all men. There are wives and daughters, or women who can be enslaved by any man. Women can be covered meat or uncovered meat. Oh, man. It is really sad. Okay, we'll jump out of here. Let's see what we got going here. We'll go back. We'll do another tune, and I'll set up to give you some more good news. Oh, that's a nice one. It's religious. You don't want to hear it. So it's only Saturday. You haven't done the nasty yet. What are you going to do? Oh, that's a nice one, too. Here's Boy, Girl, Love, and Marriage on an Equal Footing.
Yeah, we're rolling.
Okay.
Quiet, boy.
Just you know why you and I will by and by know true love ways. Sometimes we'll sigh, sometimes we'll cry, and we'll know why. Just you and I know true love ways. Throughout the day, our true love ways with those who really care. Sometimes we'll sigh,
Listen to Savage, I always hear him singing the praises of one of his idols, Bob Dylan. Oh, a great poet. Yeah, I know. To me, Bob Dylan was a Viet Cong. And that's my impression. He ushered in the pothead generation, and which is now alive and well. And about to destroy every little child in America if abortions don't get them. Yeah, we're in trouble. You don't want to face the facts. You will be one of those camp attendees when the time comes. Here's a guy that's talking about another communist singer, Pete Seeger. Commie lover till the end. Guy's name is Humberto Fantova. A lot of my friends tell me that the Latinos will always vote with the Democrats. I don't believe it. I believe that Latinos have a mind of their own. They are not as easily brainwashed as other ethnic groups, as some other ethnic groups. And I believe that once they have the facts and know the difference and scratch their head when they see President Clinton giving a little boy over to Fidel Castro as a gift for future favors, which could be drug related, allegedly. Yeah, I think Latinos have a greater love for this country, and I do know that of all the guys who died since 9/11 fighting for this country, the most prominent, the Latino name that took casualties was Gomez. 14 gave up their lives for this country. And I hate it when somebody tells me that they're going to vote the same way that the blacks vote. Because I think they're more individuals than herd followers. Only in America would a singer who insults a U.S. president as a big fool in song and be awarded the National Medal of the Arts by a U.S. President Bill Clinton, hailed as a living legend by the U.S. Library of Congress, and be invited back to play at a presidential inauguration, Barack Obama's. Oh, I realize this speaks well of our First Amendment rights. The communists use all our constitution to destroy the constitution. The ACLU was founded by a communist. Every day they're at the Supreme Court to put one more nail in America's coffin. But it also brings to mind a snicker by former Brazilian President Jânio Quadros, circa 1961. Those Americans are much like women. They have a masochistic streak. The more you slap them around, the more you get out of them. The singer, by the way, is a recently deceased leftish troubadour, Pete Seeger. In their tribute, the Washington Post hailed him as America's best-loved commie. Author and expert on commie fellow travelers Ron Radosh writes that at his prodding in 2007, Seeger first repented for his famous Stalinophilia, even composing a song to the effect titled Big Joe's Blues. The song's Big Joe was Uncle Joseph Stalin, and the song made it clear that Joe Stalin, rather than Joe McCarthy, had been the real threat to freedom in the 50s. Alas, Seeger never actually released the song for airplay. Now, why wouldn't he do that? He never did it for airplay. Let me see if I can Ron Radosh, Joseph Stalin, released the song for airplay and only sang it privately to friends. So Seeger's reputation remained pristine among most commie fellow travelers. It used to be fashionable to be a communist. Yeah, there's nothing more fashionable than destroying your country for the glory of another one. Unsurprisingly, the Castro regime's captive, literally media, contributed heavily to the Seeger tributes and eulogies this week. After all, in 1999, Pete Seeger had eagerly visited Cuba to proudly accept the Castro regime's highest cultural honor, the Medal of the Order of Felix Varela, in honor of Seeger's humanistic and artistic work in defense of the environment and against racism. What a combination. In brief, as famous peacenik Pete Seeger proudly visited the Stalinist dictator who brought the world closer to nuclear war of any in history to eagerly accept an award against racism from the Stalinist apartheid regime that jailed and tortured the most black political prisoners in modern history. There's a lot of racism in Cuba, and it goes by the color of your skin. The tint can make all the difference in the world. An article in Castro's eunuch media by the regime's eunuch cultural ambassador, singer Silvio Rodriguez, who often met with Seeger, relates how 3 years ago, during a meeting in New York, Seeger lamented to Rodriguez that conditions in Latin America had not improved because of the U.S. imperialism, presumably, but that this would change in the next 15 years. So here he was at 91, still blaming the U.S. and presumably capitalism for the woes of the Third World, as brought about by its own thieves, frauds, and scandals. Shortly after his meeting with Rodriguez, Pete Seeger joined ranks with several U.S. celebrities. You ready? You ready for this? This is called the Discombagio List. Danny Glover, Martin Sheen, Oliver Stone, Susan Sarandon, to boost one of Castro regime's most vital campaigns by signing a letter to free the Cuban Five. The letter starts, "We are dismayed that the Cuban Five, who have committed no crime against the United States nor posed any threat to this country's national security, have now been imprisoned for 12 years. The Five monitored the activities of violent groups of Cuban exiles in Miami, activities that have already resulted in the deaths of thousands of Cuban nationals." Make believe. That's a make believe stuff. "They sought simply to protect their country from further acts of terrorism. Why don't you stay there? You could be a leader in your new country." Here's what Castro's KGB trained terrorist, the Cuban Five, convicted by a U.S. federal jury and upheld all the way to the Supreme Court, are actually guilty of. These people play hardball. You know what we're doing? We're still calling Democrats Democrats when we should be calling it the Communist Party. On September 14, 1998, the FBI uncovered a Castro spy ring in Miami and arrested 10 of them. 4 others managed to scoot back to Cuba. These became known as the WASP Network, or the Cuban Five in Castroite parlance. According to the FBI's affidavit, the 26 charges against the convicted Castro spies, championed by Seeger, gathered intelligence against the Boca Chica Air Naval Station in Key West, the MacDill Air Force Base in Tampa, and the headquarters of the Southern Command in Homestead, Florida. Compiling the names, home addresses, and medical files of the U.S. Southern Command atop offices, along with those of hundreds of officers stationed at Boca Chica. Now, for that, Danny Glover should swing, along with Susan Sarandon. Yes, and the rest of those named above. They should swing, and Peter should be dug up and put on a rope to. Compiling, infiltrating the headquarters of the U.S. Southern Command, sending letter bombs to Cuban Americans, spying on MacDill Air Force Base, the U.S. Armed Forces Network worldwide for fighting low-intensity conflicts, locating entry points into Florida for smuggling explosives and cocaine and the marijuana and the heroin for the American party people. Pete Seeger's poster boys also infiltrated the Cuban exile group Brothers to the Rescue. You know the story about Brothers to the Rescue? Who flew unarmed planes to rescue Cuban rafters in the Florida Straits, also known as the Cemetery Without Crosses. The estimates of the number of Cubans dying horribly in the Cemetery Without Crosses run from 50,000 to 85,000, including Ilian Gonzalez's mother, who the Democrat Party labeled as a putana because she loved her son so much and she wanted to raise him in freedom. So if you do that, then you're against the Democrat Party, which is the Parti de la Muerte and the Communist Party today. You are a putana. You are no good. But the father who showed up at the airport giving America the finger, he was a hero. Yes, Geraldo Rivera carries his picture in his wallet. Geraldo, who worked at the time for another news network, who sold out the Cuban people. Geraldo, El Dratón. Yeah. Prior to Castroism, by the way, Cuba was swamped with more immigrants per capita than the U.S., including during the Ellis Island years. So you can imagine how the Cuban exodus embarrasses the Castroites, including those in the USA. Cemetery Without Crosses, I didn't know that. By February of 1996, Brothers to the Rescue had flown 1,800 of these humanitarian missions and helped rescue 4,200 men, women, and children. That month, Danny Glover's and Pete Seeger's corps celebrately passed to Castro. Oh, man. Swing this guy up. Swing this guy from the highest gallows. That month, Danny Glover's and Pete Seeger's corps celebre passed to Castro the flight plan for one of the brothers' humanitarian flights over the Cemetery Without Crosses. I never knew it was called that. We have shitty news media. With this info in hand, Castro's top guns jumped into MiGs, took off and valiantly blasted apart and in international airspace the lumbering and utterly defenseless Cessnas. Four members of the humanitarian rights were thus murdered in cold blood by communists. Three of those murdered men were U.S. citizens and the other a legal U.S. resident. Pete Seeger, whatever else you might say about him, was certainly consistent. That's the end of the story. Nice story, Humberto Fontava, an American freedom fighter. Freedom still lives in parts of the occupied USA. Okay, back to a tune, and then we'll see what we're going to do next. Let's see what we got here. A Blog Talk Radio. Oh, we can do it and see if that's fast or slow. Let me see. I will give you an old 50s song. This one really cracks me up. Oh, I know what I wanted to tell you. We were talking about language, right? You give everybody a Rosetta Stone and be speaking English in 2 weeks instead of Obama phone, Rosetta Stone. There's a movie, and it was made in the 50s. Two Frank Sinatra movies that were real good. Man with the Golden Arm. That was about a heroin addiction. And, you know, when they made that movie, it was for Sinatra and Kim Novak. When they made that movie, they would not show the needle going into the arm. Look what they show today. Have you met Freddie Hypodermic Fingers? Look what they show today. You don't think that Hollywood is decadent and is destroying the morality of the country? And you know what? They can't even do it in good taste. They're filthy animals. Oliver Stone is a pig in a blanket and a communist. Allegedly. Got to say allegedly or the lawyers come. Yeah, unbelievable, man. Okay, so the other movie was The Manchurian Candidate. And it's a real good political movie. It shows you how politicians are evil people. And also how communist infiltration is as strong today as it was when they first entered the Office of Strategic Services during World War II, moved on to the State Department and on to the UN, and now they sit on the Supreme Court. You'll never know who they are. We're in trouble, man. We're in big trouble. And now I'm worried about the corruption of big business, which I have championed all my life. I love big American oil. There's nothing greater than I love big. I hope it gets 10 times bigger. I'm not worried about big American oil. I'm worried about big un-American government. Back to the story of the Manchurian Candidate. These guys are captured in North Korea, and they are brainwashed. And one of the guys that is brainwashing them is a guy, I think his name was Howard Da Silva. I think he looked like an Oriental guy. He was Latino, but he looked Oriental. And he played a communist interrogation and brainwashing officer. So all these guys get released, and they don't know they're brainwashed, but they're, at night they're having the same dreams. They keep having bad dreams. They can't sleep. And all of a sudden, Lawrence Harvey, they created a cover story for him. They made him a hero. But when he was being brainwashed, they had him shoot a fellow soldier, a black guy, in the head. And to test the power of their brainwashing capability. And so they made him a hero. Everybody had the same story. And when they start talking about this, when one guy meets another guy and goes, yeah, that Lawrence Harvey was a great guy, and the guy will say, Lawrence Harvey was the finest, best friend a man could have. And then one guy would hear another guy say it, and they eventually came to discover they all had the same rehearsed answer describing Lawrence Harvey. So here's Lawrence Harvey. He's in New York, an apartment. He's a hero. They gave him the Congressional Medal of Honor. And the guy knocks on the door. He opens the door, and it's his Korean handler. And he goes, who are you? He says, I'm just a guy. What do you want? He says, I want a job. What kind of job? He says, I can do anything. I can cook. I can sew. I could be an interpreter. Lawrence Harvey laughs at him and says, interpreter? This is the United States. We speak English here. You think he could say that today? I don't think so. We'll give you a tune. We go together. It's a 50s tune. It's about a couple that met in a sweet shop. Yeah, when was the last time somebody came home and told you they met their opposite sex in a sweet shop? When was the last time they come home and told you they met their opposite sex? You're in trouble, man. You're in big trouble. But the song goes, we go together like castles and kings. We go together like birds of a feather. We go together like two robins in spring. We go together like straws in the Coke. And today when people talk about straws and the Coke, they're doing their impersonation of an actor named Hoffman, who did exit stage left. He did express checkout at 46 years old because somebody told him when he smoked his first joint it wasn't habit-forming. It's not habit-forming, no. And killing a baby is only removing a little tissue, right? Yeah, you're the same guy, aren't you? Yeah, you voted to burn the flag. Will you call it freedom of speech? We know you. We know you. Another song to play for you, and one of the songs I have is called Warpath, and it's actually an Indian song. I got a CD made by American Indians who served in the military, and the cover of the CD shows a retired Indian, probably in his 70s or 80s, and he's sitting on a bunk bed in a very small house, you know, a GI bunk bed. You know, he probably bought it at Surplus. And he's got the bottom bunk. There's no top bunk. And he's got his medals and his uniform. And that's all he's got. But I never heard him complain. And I never saw so much pride in a country that American Indians have. You never hear them bitch. And if you get one that bitches, he's rogue. He's not the run-of-the-mill. They have pride, man. They have warrior pride. And I saw a ceremony in a mall. And I think the Indians were Shoshone Indians. And they were all veterans, probably back to Korea. And they had a flag... ceremony in the mall, and nothing but patriotism. None of this, well, you know, I go to Penn, I was here, and they, you know, it's not my fault, blah, 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 blah. You know what cracks me up? Go to the ghetto. Go to the ghetto at 5 o'clock in the morning. Pick out any building. Look for the ones where the Mexicans are sitting on the stoop and watch the contractors come by in big brand-new trucks shouting, I can use 10 guys. There we go, right in the truck. I can use 5 guys in the truck.
By 6 o'clock in the morning, those stoops are empty of Mexicans. 11 o'clock, the inhabitants look out the window. Oh, man, I got to go out and get a job today. You know what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying. There's winners and losers. Unfortunately, our government is creating too many losers. So I just want to give a little tribute out to American Indians. And if you go to my website,